You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode 22. This episode, Christopher Linoleum.
Joining us is the Green Lantern Corecast. I'm your host, Frankie Mateo, and joining us today are Kuhan, ever annoying and always on my nerves, Calton, always annoying and always on my nerves, on a constant basis. Eric, he's alright. Andrew doesn't really say anything that matters to me. Bing, she's cool, and Brandon, I accept him for who he is,
currently,
but he really needs to get help.
He's currently doing it in the Boudica.
I'm depressed now.
Dance too much Boudica in the pants.
And as you can apparently assume, we are all doing it in the Boudica. It has become our new catchphrase, has become our new way of life. Everyone should look it up on Google right now, the moment you're hearing this, as my voice is telling you
quick
these things.
Someone go to Urban Dictionary.
Urban Dictionary. It is. Do it in the Boudica. Apparently, that fat already has sailed. If you're now Googling it or in midway of Googling it, don't Google it anymore.
You're too late.
Stop.
You're too late, and you look stupid. Stop Googling.
Now, today's show, we're going to discuss a few things that has happened in the world of Green Lantern news. Also, two issues that came up in the past 2 weeks. To start off, Nathan Fillion, Captain Tight Pants himself, has been cast as Hal Jordan for the new upcoming to be released Green Lantern Emerald Knights. As everybody knows, it's a compilation of Green Lantern stories that are going to be written by different writers in the industry and drawn by many different animators. Think of it as Batman Gotham Knights, but in Green Lantern space. Now, hearing the news, most of us are excited for this. Again, I am. I mean, it's Captain Tight Pants. Captain Mal Reynolds to me. I love this guy. What does everybody else think?
I think what they should do is just to throw all the fans off is have him play Jon Stewart. Like, just to screw with everybody. Be like, yeah.
I think it's good that a lot of the internet message boards can finally shut up about trying to cast the whole cast of Firefly in every single franchise movie or anything
else.
At least they can shut up about this one.
I would not be happy until Alan Tudyk is playing Guy Gardner.
This is just going to incite them.
That would be awesome.
I've never seen Nathan in anything in my life.
Have you
seriously?
Seen Castle?
Nothing.
Have you ever seen Castle?
Nope.
No, Two guys and a girl at a pizza place.
Nope. I heard that was
Ryan Reynolds,
though, right?
Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, that was. That's right. Nathan Fillion and Ryan Reynolds. That's a good point.
Supposedly
taking place in Boston.
Nathan Fillion brought it up when he got cast. He was like, oh, yeah, it's nice to be cast. I blew up with Ryan Reynolds. I'm like, I don't know if your career
counts. Your career sort of existed around the same time.
A Blueberry movie just got released this week of 2 hours of Ryan Reynolds in a box, and it made millions of dollars. It's just Ryan Reynolds 2 hours in a box, and it made millions of dollars on Blu-ray, and I think I pre-ordered it. So that's not ever going to happen with you, Nathan Fillion. You're a nice guy, but no, I like Nathan Fillion. I think it is a good choice for voice casting. Why not? I mean, I think I like Christopher Maloney a lot in the First Flight. DC Animated Universe has a tendency to recast their roles a lot and make them sound exactly the same. And so I think if you listen to Christopher Maloney, it sounds just kind of like Nathan Fillion's going to sound anyway. So maybe
most of the Green Lantern cast, it hasn't been the same. I mean, Christopher Maloney has done Hal Jordan. We've had David Boreanaz has done Hal Jordan. They're completely different. Takes on the character.
Hopefully you're right. I think it's going to give them an excuse to make him funnier. That's kind of good, though. You know, I mean.
Did you just say Christopher Linoleum?
No, Manoli.
Linoleum.
Maloney.
Maloney, in a way. But okay.
I think the best part of Maloney. This
Maloney. Did you just correct me after saying Maloney?
No, you said Maloney. You said
I think Maloney is on.
Go on. Doesn't really matter.
I'd like to see Christopher Linoleum in something.
I want it. Not as a voice actor. He sounds like Linoleum.
So Jason Isaacs is Sinestro.
Jason Isaacs is Sinestro. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are excited about that. Karen, what do you think about that? Something about
I cannot wait to see hear Jason Isaacs play Sinestro. Most people know him from the Harry Potter films. He was also in a really good kind of more accurate, I guess, to the source material Peter Pan movie, where it was just dirty. It was such a dirty movie. I loved it.
It was so dirty.
Voice is like sex.
This wasn't Hook.
I loved I loved him in The Patriot episode of Highlander that was Hook. Pretty memorable.
I think it was just called Peter Pan, and he did play Captain Hook, though, and he was...
Yeah, he did. And yeah, that's right. He was in The Patriot, where he played the biggest asshole who's ever lived. I think
that's where I remembered him from.
The Patriot part... that was part two of Mel Gibson's I Hate the British.
Yeah. Yes, that's the movie where, spoiler alert, Jason Isaacs kills, every half hour he kills another more important member of Mel Gibson's family until 6 hours later Mel Gibson finally kills him, yeah.
Jeez. Who's Henry Rollins?
Oh, dude, you did not just say that.
You fucking mutant. Are you kidding?
I looked him up, clearly. I'm not, you know.
If you want to hear something awesome, he does a duet with William Shatner, which is amazing, in a song called I Can't Get Behind That.
Except
right.
I'm sort of
talking. Okay. So, he's excited that he's in this?
Yes.
Yeah. As Kilowog, I mean, who knows, but I didn't, you know, why not? I mean, you know, why not?
They mentioned who Rowdy Roddy Piper is going to play.
He's playing Bolt. I forgot how you pronounce that guy's name. He's the unrelenting villain that goes after Bolfalag. How's it go? How
do you pronounce it? Bolfunga.
The one who went after Mogo for a time, and then the other one who went after Guy Gardner when he went out to the Paradise Retreat. If you remember those.
I still have no clue Henry Rollins is.
Really?
Yeah, just do Google.
God, I'm in the middle of a Google.
I wikied it.
I'm on Wikipedia page.
He has a nice little resume, I guess, but it doesn't mean anything if I've never seen him in anything. But I guess
see him in much. He's a musician.
Well, no, he had his own show on IFC. He's kind of a well-regarded guy.
IFC,
I mean, just,
which is the...
You should know who he is, I think, is what I'm saying.
No, I probably should.
Well, the move...
I do also want to say, I think, I think, I don't know if I've said enough times on the cast, but I think First Flight was really awesome. It's probably my favorite interpretation of the Green Lantern storyline anywhere, but it looks like that I think everybody was kind of assuming it was going to maybe be like Gotham Knights, where it was all crazy different art in every storyline, and it probably will still have a different design element, but the directors all seem to be people that have just worked with DC animation before, so I think it's just going to be kind of like, you know, just three vignettes by themselves, maybe with slightly different design. But anyway, the main design, all the characters' designs seem to be based on First Flight. I mean, they released an official image of Hal and Arisia, it's the same costumes. They released a photo of a maquette they're making of Sinestro, and it's the same costume. So I think that's kind of cool. I mean, anything to tie it closer to First Flight. But I mean, I believe it probably doesn't take place in First Flight continuity, because the only plot released we have so far is that one of the stories is about Hal training Arisia. You know, if you watch First Flight, obviously that's not how the storyline plays out. I don't know. What do you guys think about? Do you care? Would you rather seen a newer design? You know, or were you hoping they were going to go back to like the animated series design they're putting now, or it's closer to the original costume?
I was kind of hoping for some anime inspired stuff, because I really liked Gotham Knights, and I mean, I didn't expect, you know, anything as drastic as that, but I definitely wanted drastically different designs, and I don't think we're going to get that anymore. I mean, we'll be lucky to get the Crisis on Two Earths design.
Sure.
I mean, that's being used a lot now, especially with the Young Justice TV series up.
Yeah, I mean we haven't seen that. I don't have a problem with that design. I just don't think they're going to use it. Like he said, I think they just kind of be lazy with it and tell four different stories in the same general universe and just not give a damn about First Flight's continuity.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to do like Bolfunga 1. It's probably going to be the Mogo story and then the Arisia story and then something with Sinestro and something with Kilowog. It seems kind of like Anyway, yeah, long story short, blah, blah, blah. It looks like one of the stories, it looks like because they revealed, you know, the only thing we know for sure is that one of the stories will be about a region Hal kind of like working shit out. Abin Sur's in it. We know Sinestro's in it. Obviously, it's a prequel story, so that'll probably be a Sinestro Abin Sur story. And I mean, with Bofonga revealed, it's probably going to be a Mogo story, which, you know, I mean, everybody likes the Mogo story. I'm not that impressed on the Mogo story because, you know, the fact that Mogo's a planet is cool, but some Green Lanterns are abstract fucking concepts, so it's not really that big of a deal that one of them's a planet, you know? But yeah, I think my biggest, like I said, First Flight, like the designs, it's totally cool. And I think my biggest regret is that Victor Garber isn't doing Sinestro because I think he totally made First Flight, but I'm excited about it. I don't care that it looks like, I didn't really like Gotham Knights and the fact that it was so disjointed. You can tell that the scripts were just kind of thrown together and the images were kind of just like thrown, you know, directed by people who had no idea what was happening in the scripts. So I'm okay with it being all kind of, not to be like that guy.
So you want these four stories to be connected?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't care if they're, I mean, in Gotham Knights, they were sequential. I mean, they were really connected, but, I don't care if they're not, I don't care if they're part of one big story. I like the idea that it's not being outsourced to directors who aren't really like, you know, who are just kind of like famous directors who don't really, who aren't going to be really get able to read the script very well. And I like that it's kind of being kept in-house because, you know, the same teams worked on all these really good DC animated movies. So, and like Gotham Knights, I think, I mean, I don't mean to be like argumentative, but I think it is the weakest of all the DC animated movies really so far.
Yeah, that would definitely be argumentative.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand how your point of saying that the Gotham Knight movie itself was, you know, it's the weakest out of the, all the DC animated movies. I mean, it's true. It is a disjointed project. It was multiple scripts done by four or five different writers.
I wasn't impressed by any of them.
Impressed by a few, but only because you can literally sit down and watch my standalones.
I like the Brian Azzarello one. Yeah, the Brian Azzarello one was good. The Deadshot one was kind of a waste of time. The first one was the same exact story. Yeah, the first one was the same exact story. Like, we wasted like 20 minutes on the same exact story that did Legend of the Dark Knight like 20 times better in the animated series. So, you know, so then you got two of them that are a complete waste of time. And then the one with the bulletproof was just silly. So the only one that really worked for me was the Brian Azzarello, where he just wanders around the sewer being shot. I just liked that one a lot, but that makes the movie worth it. But anyway, that's enough about that, right? I mean, who cares about that? But
but I wouldn't mind if the Green Lantern movies themselves followed the same pattern, only because it does broaden the scope of people who wanted to watch the who never heard of Green Lantern and wanted to watch a animated piece and try to, you know, judge for themselves what the character is to them. It would have been a worthwhile if they actually went through that path. But
you know, how about whether it's okay?
No, what were we gonna say?
Oh, how about whether or not we think it's superfluous, considering it's just going to be a movie about four different Green Lantern adventures, and we have a Green Lantern animated series coming out like 3 months later? I mean, doesn't it seem strange to release like, you know, 70 minutes of material when, like, you know, 3 months later we're going to get like, you know...
Not when we realize that Warner Brothers is $1 billion business.
No, I mean...
I know, I just the reason for doing it, but I mean...
The reason for them doing it is clear that they just want to capitalize on the fact that their movie's going to come out and they want to have a little cash cow coming in, and they're still going to have an anime series waiting in the wing to still get a little bit more of cash cow. But yeah, sure. There's not really a big reason to get that movie, like, to make that movie, but it's a tie-in. It's supposed to be fun for them, you know. And Lauren Montgomery's directing most of it, so I can't be mad.
This is for us, not really the same audience as the animated series is going to be. You know, the Ben 10 audience isn't running out to get Crisis on Two Earths or...
I tell you though, I mean, not to be like that guy, but those videos sell more to kids than they do to adults. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that people do. I mean, a regular DVD sales of like a Wonder Woman movie sold like three times as much as, you know, her highest selling issue of the past 10 years. And it's not like fans buying it. It's I do think a lot of kids buy it. So it's, I mean, that they are relying on like kids and stuff, which is why like when they put out like Under the Red Hood, which is PG-13, they're like, oh, it's such a big deal, it's PG-13, but it still gets sold to kids. It doesn't really matter, you know? I mean,
well, yeah, cartoons equal children's entertainment. Everyone knows that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, just like that kid show Family Guy.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, yeah.
Round of the Red Hood was probably the second best one, or third best one, really, I guess, but yeah. Anyway.
Sorry, well, moving on, again, to say, it's other tie-ins that, you know, they're doing for the feature film, is the fact that they're doing Green Lantern prequel comic books for the movie, and, you know, it's gonna have, stories such as Sinestro, Abin Sur, Kilowog, Hal Jordan, two of which stories are being written by Jeff Johns himself. Michael Green is doing one, and so is why can't I remember his name?
Greg Berlanti.
Greg Berlanti is helping get Jeff Johns writing the Hal Jordan story. But I forget, there's one more.
Guggenheim's doing the
Mark Guggenheim, there you are. Mark Guggenheim.
There's a lot of guys who work on this.
Basically,
it's a lot of guys who
work. Yeah, a lot of guys who are working on the actual movie script itself are doing these prequel comics for the movie. Now, what can I say about this? I really have no idea. I mean, what can we see in a prequel comic book that's going to be shown to us later on in the movie? What's everybody's opinion on this?
I feel like we're going to be wasting money and valuable time, valuable podcast time, talking about a whole bunch of crappy issues.
Isn't that what our time's always been on?
We'll get to how amazing these issues are in a few moments.
I hope that they're better than the last, superhero movie I went to see that had prequel issues was the 2007 Ninja Turtle CGI movie, and those issues sucked. So I'm hoping these are a step higher than that. But I have hope that maybe these will be. I'm going to go into this trying to be as optimistic and positive as possible, and so I'm hoping that with these prequels, it'll kind of at least give me, someone who doesn't really have a whole lot of understanding of a lot of the previous Green Lantern stuff, it'll at least let me know what kind of world they're setting up, so I kind of know what to expect when I go in to see the movie. So I'm kind of hoping that they're good in that regard. I hope.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that I think connected to that is, I remember when Superman Returns came out, they had a couple of prequel specials leading into that, and I believe, unless I'm mistaken, they were all co-written at least by some of the screenwriters and worked on, plotted by the screenwriters and stuff, and they weren't very good either. But they weren't very good for some reason. I still like that movie. I thought it was really great, but the same problems the movie had, the comics kind of translated, so it was obvious that they were just padding out the story and stuff. I think with these, you get a better opportunity to, it's like the video game where they're fighting the Manhunters, you do have an opportunity to kind of take stories that are involving the characters and, that we know from the histories and kind of just updating them from the movies. And, whether or not the movie's a success kind of depends on whether or not these really matter, because if the movie doesn't do very well or it doesn't get a sequel, then these are the only expansions of this universe we'll ever get. Also, if the movie does really well, these are completely pointless. Like, they'll be completely thrown out by the next movie and not paid attention to by, any storyline, which is, always happens with tie-in comics and stuff. So, but I do agree with Wes that there's going to be a lot of, I can't imagine they're going to be any good. I mean, I don't want to just be pessimistic like I always am. It's clear they're going to kind of just throw them out there. I mean, Jeff Johns already writes like enough titles that his work has suffered immeasurably, and I can't imagine spreading out amongst like seven more titles in 1 month is going to make it feel any better, What do you think, Mew?
Oh, I don't know. It might be good, but I'm just not sure. I mean, I don't want to be as pessimistic as, Eric is, but I really don't know anything about this. I just found out, and I really haven't seen who's writing or reading, and I've been spacing out for the last 10 minutes, so I don't know what anyone was talking about, so.
Don't say that on the cast.
Well, Colton, did you say something?
Oh, what? Who? I'm sorry, the Alzheimer's is kicking in. What did you say?
I'm sorry.
They're entitled not to pay attention to, anything we're talking about.
They never pay attention to what I say anyway, so it doesn't matter.
For the record, I'm looking forward to the Michael Green, Carl Kershaw, Alvin Sewer issue. I'm a big fan of Carl Kershaw. I thought Teen Titans Year One looked great. I read his web comic. I bought the first issue of Assassin's Creed. So I like Carl Kershaw. I don't have the best track record with Michael Green. He wrote a couple Flash issues that were shit. But I mean,
I'm gonna sugarcoat
it. The artists on here are pretty good. The artists listed are pretty good. Fernando Daggino just did a good issue of Justice League Generation Lost. Joe Bennett is a pretty average artist. Fabrizio Florentino is doing some different work on Titans. Cliff Richards, another average but capable artist, and Jerry Ordway, who's a mixed bag lately, but has
a
good history.
I think he's great. I guess that's a good point. Some of the art could be good. I'm not in love with Kershaw, but I mean, you know, Jerry Ordway, that could be pretty cool. I think I'd rather have seen Jerry Ordway on, like, the Kilowog special or something that's not so, like, you know, whatever. But obviously, yeah, the Hal Jordan special is probably going to be the least interesting one out of all of them. It's a prequel, so.
I wonder why.
So, you know, it'll probably have to deal with him being drunk. Cool.
What are the odds?
Well, no, I think, yeah, well, I think in all fairness, it should be the best one. That's why you can see there's the most people working on it. But I think it's just, not be that I hate Hal Jordan, you know, whatever, but because I don't, it's just, you know, I happen to think that it's going to be about his life before the movie, and that's not going to be as exciting as seeing Abin Sur fuck shit up, you know?
You know, this is kind of interesting. This is almost like the year of Abin Sur, because isn't he getting his own thing in a Flashpoint as well?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Abin Sur has always been a little bit of a fetish about Abin Sur, right? Like, I always think Abin Sur is cool, and the more information you find out about him, it's interesting, but you don't really care. Like, his personality is just like, cool, that was the guy who was Green Lantern before Hal, that's awesome! You know, I mean, it's, you know, I don't care that Sinestro married his sister. I mean, who gives a shit about that? But, you know, whatever.
Well, aside from that, also, DC Director also released the fact they're going to be movie statuettes, like, you know, statuettes, a few figures that'll be coming out, such as Hal Jordan, busts of Sinestro, and also at a full, what is it, a full-scale Green Lantern power battery?
Yeah, and there's also, there's a couple of Hal Jordan statues, a couple of busts of Hal Jordan and Sinestro, and one of Tomar Rey, and a big one of Kilowog, and the smuggest face I've ever seen in any statue in my life that makes me want to break fucking Ryan Reynolds' neck on one of these, like, statues. But, you know, some of them are looking, I guess.
What's the power battery made of? Metal or some kind of plastic or?
Probably plastic. Does anybody you own a life-size battery at any point?
No. Not at all. No?
Definitely. I would have gotten the Kyle one. The Kyle one is too small. It's like.
Yeah, it's miniature in comparison to all the other ones.
No, it's not. It's not a life-size one.
To scale.
No, there's a life-size Red Lantern battery, so you can go buy that, Andrew. I know you're really excited about that.
What is the Red Lantern? There's also, you know, a Sinestro Corps battery.
You could totally beat Geoff Johns with that.
I think I might, if the movie's any good, I'm probably going to want to buy the movie battery. I'll tell you that.
I think it's ugly. Like, I see it, the more uglier it gets.
It's totally ugly. I dig it. It looks like the Bio Booster Armor Guyver. Like, you know, it's totally ugly. But I really dig the design, so. I like that it's ugly.
I think they went out of their way to say, oh, we're gonna make this look, all alien and, ooh, look, it's so natural. And then they got this wood chip at the top that's like, oh, here's a perfect handle for you, Hal. Like, yes. Random.
I think it's supposed to be stone. I like that it's like, I like the idea that, like, there, it was painted and the paint's chipping off of it, so it looks like it's glowing through. I mean, this is actually giving us our best view of the
battery,
so. But I like the idea of being that, like, it's just an old battery that's been passed around from person to person. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
No one thought to get it the new paint job or anything?
No need.
This is gonna sound really, really bad, but Tomar Rey in this bus looks extremely gay,
which is fine. Tomar Rey is
fine. It's fine. Just wondering why.
It's totally okay if that's his choice. I mean,
I believe because of the design elements of the character that he's a big lanky guy, you're going to see him prancing around like a Guillermo del Toro character, like a big praying mantis man and stuff, just because of the nature of the way. That's usually what they do with characters, big spindly characters that make them walk around like spiders and stuff. So they had to represent that in some way. But
And looking at this Kilowog, I'm fine with it now. You know, I was against the whole ugly E.T. turtle thing, but if he comes out looking this cool, then I'll be fine with it. I'm kind of upset that his costume isn't as green as everyone else's, but it's all right.
Yeah, it's interesting, these busts. I mean, not to be like going on and on about these busts, but they definitely show off a lot of the different textures side by side. You know that. Tomar Rey's wearing like scales and Sinestro's wearing a lot of like triangles and stuff.
Leaf patterns.
Yeah. And they also, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this, but a lot of the product, Tomar Rey's colors have been ramped up to orange and everybody's kind of like, why is that happening? And the production designer's like, no, it's really just for the smaller toys for kids and stuff because of whatever. So, I mean, anyway, because this bust is definitely straight up green, so that made me feel better. I was kind of getting a little grumpy because of the orange.
Yeah, I saw that. Is that Larfleeze?
Yeah,
Spin could be mistaken for the flaming hair.
Yeah,
I almost kind of wish that Kilowog's mouth was closed.
Yeah, it's kind of
Kilowog. He's just angry about something, I guess.
Well, no, I know, but when just looking at that, for some reason, it's really reminiscent of I think it's like a cave troll or something, either from Lord of the Rings. No, definitely the one from Lord of the Rings, not the one from Harry Potter. But that's just, I don't know. It just sits
not
the wrong
Harry
way.
Potter, definitely the one from Lord of the Rings, guys. Just so you know.
You know,
sorry, well, I wanted to clarify.
You know, I want to say something about Kilowog's design in, like, the comics and stuff. Kilowog's design for me has always been so strange that I could never quite figure out what's going on with it. You know, I always thought his head was covered in dicks and he's got, like, 60 dicks on his head and stuff. But he just has two little dog ears on his head and he's got big dicks all over his mouth and stuff with a big jaw. And I'm like, the design for the movies made me really look at it. I'm like, that looks nothing like Kilowog, but I know it's supposed to be Kilowog. So it's interesting how just two or three cosmetic changes of just moving ears 2 inches and making the dicks less dickish kind of doesn't look anything like Kilowog.
I always kind of figured he looked like a hippo and not quite so much that he was a giant dick. But now I know.
Yeah, hippo. I always get that confused with dicks.
Dick face is always easy to mix up with hippo.
I'm looking at this picture.
Every time I see a hippo with two, I'm like, zip it up, yo. Zip up here.
I'm looking at the picture of this boss. And yeah, I kind of want to punch my mouth in the face.
Yeah, that's smug bust.
Yeah, like what?
The smug bust.
Listen, I'm just telling you. Do an image search for Google on Google Kilowog. The first image you'll see the second or third image you'll see will be a bunch of dicks lying on Kilowog's hippo-like mouth. I'm just saying.
With the internet, probably.
Yeah, all right, we move on.
And we move on from Kilowog's cosmetic appearance.
You don't want to stick mouth thing?
It's funny because the second picture is a picture of the movie. But yeah, exactly. I agree.
No, we are moving on from this now. We're going to move into the discussion of the... unless we have any more news. Do we have any more news or we're done?
I think we're done.
All right, then we're going to go into reviews. Rider's Day number 19 and Emerald Warriors number 7 were released. Now, Brightest Day number 19 continues on the proud tradition of not telling us anything that actually happens prior. So we get to see, you know, the aftermath of dead men having killed Shara Hall and Carter Hall. And all that we know is it's all part of the greater plan. Now we move on from this, we get the Aqua Wars. We actually get a little bit more of the new Aqua Lad stretching his legs out and Aquaman himself going off to save the beach, I guess. You know?
The beach.
Because, you know, apparently when you strike the nerve center of the world or want to strike against all humanity, you're going to fight everybody on the beach, you know.
Well, if they kill Fonzie, it's the end of the world.
So we get a little bit more onto what's going on, you know, with Mara's people. We get more little... Actually, we don't get anything, actually. We just get Aquaman and Aqualad fighting a giant war on the beach.
And then Aquaman gets disarmed.
Oh, he loses his hand again. Yeah, he loses his hand. And the greatest
ever. He gets disarmed. You have to use the pun.
No.
Yes.
He loses his hand and he gets told by Black Manta, you should be used to that already. So,
can we say about this? I'm a jerk.
What can we say about this issue itself? I mean, it's good to look at. I like the artwork in here. It was pretty solid most of the way through. But as a standalone issue, we didn't get that much Aquaman. You know, we hadn't had that much Aquaman since Aquaman had Aqualad, two, 3 issues back? So what can we say about this?
I think it could have used a little bit more actual content rather than just straight up fighting. A little bit more story development.
I can agree with you there, but we got, I don't know. A few pages back where Aquaman had to reveal the fact that that Aqualad's parents were something or other, and then
something about
the Bermuda Triangle and something or other, and then we got a war. So
yeah, Aquaman can use a hand.
Seriously? Quit while you're behind.
What fleshing out you think they could have you know, strived for?
Well, the main thing I think it really needs is it really does need more content. Because really, it's just a battle at a beach. You don't even know why it's that specific beach. What makes this a tactical advantage?
It's nearby.
I mean, there's just not a lot of substance to it. There's nothing in there to make me care about what's going on. I mean, I get the whole graphical impact of, like, oh, they're storming the beach and stuff, and it looks kind of cool, but there's nothing beyond the surface.
No, because slaughtering people, it's just blasé now.
Well, that's nothing to care about.
I mean, come on.
It's just a shallow battle.
Again, Blackest Night was a couple of days ago. It's not a big deal. It's not.
Blackest Night didn't have that much slaughtering.
Well, they supposedly did. I mean, we kept cutting to the cities and everybody running from, like, dead Ezreal and stuff like that. We didn't see a lot of it because that was the problem with that event that we didn't really see. But I guess we can't really complain too much about seeing slaughtering rampage and stuff when we, you know, though it doesn't really happen too much here. I mean, you really see mostly just Aquaman and Aqualad show up in time to save everybody. But, you know, they're doing some superhero-y stuff, like saving lives, which, you know, Geoff Johns seems to be averse to showing superheroes actually saving people's lives, so I'm actually really happy it's happening here.
Admittedly, that is a good point.
I think one of the things we should talk about really quick before we get into the beach stuff is that the beginning of the story seems to sort of, again, in the vaguest, brightest day kind of way, reveal, I guess, what's been going on the whole time, that the white battery is kind of shadier than it lets itself on to be, though I think it was kind of like, from the first story, we were supposed to believe that it was shady, so it's kind of cycling back around to continuing to be shady again, and saying that there's going to be a dark avatar and a white avatar, and they're going to have to battle and stuff, and through solicitations, it's implied that, like, you know, Dead Man's going to be the evil one, or Firestorm's going to be, they're going to have to fight each other and stuff, but,
and Aang's
gonna
show up and be like, I'm the Avatar.
Yeah.
why is Dead Man
so
become?
Is, Jake Sully.
I feel like Jeff read some of Gail Simone's latest Birds of Prey and went, Avatar of War, Avatar of Peace. I can use avatars now, not just entities. Forget, I can do avatars.
I'm waiting for the dark side.
And one thing I want to point out about the art really quick is that it was really sloppy. Unfortunately, it looks like Irez drew most of it. And I think Irez's best work has been drawing Aquaman, in Brightest Day and stuff. But there is
the
a part on
the new Batman.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. The one picture drew Batman was pretty awesome. Though I do want to say that there's a pretty glaring art mistake in this issue that, when Aquaman is swimming around with his trident on his back, it's very clear that what happened was, they drew all these different pictures of Aquaman hanging out with no trident, and then in the battle he has a trident, and they're probably like, well, where does trident come from? So they went back and you can tell by looking at the art, he went back and redrew the trident on an awkward position on his back, didn't even bother to draw a holster, so apparently it's magnetized to his back and awkward panel way possible.
Don't question sea magic from Poseidon.
Yeah. I do want to say it's also weird to have an aqua war fought on the land, but I'm not going to get into that joke, but whatever.
You can't kill the land dwellers in the water.
I want to say really quick, though, I think this
Flash
is...
Flashpoint, Aqua War, where do they come up with this stuff?
I think this is my favorite, one of my favorite
Geoff
issues.
Geoff Johns, that's where it comes from.
I think Geoff Johns is watching TV and is like, hey, that's kind of interesting. Flashpoint, I could probably, right. probably make that.
Eric, what was your point?
I think this is the best, one of my favorite issues of Brightest Day so far, because I think they, at least, it was a clear conflicted thing. It wasn't, you know, foregone what was going to happen. Aquaman got there. He was in over his head. You legitimately got the sense that they're in trouble. You know, it was superheroes saving people's lives, fighting just a bunch of shitty assholes, you know, who just are doing shit for no reason and stuff. I do think, though, that if you actually go back and read the Brightest Day storyline, Aquaman parts, the entire storyline collapses because of this issue. The whole point of Siren's people is that they're trying to get out of the Bermuda Triangle hole, and they need Aqualad to do it, and yet they've been doing it for centuries. They've been going in and out of it for centuries. They kidnapped, apparently, it's not very clear, but Black Manta and his wife were both kidnapped and tortured by Siren's people. Maybe it's going to happen later in the story, presumably, but Black Manta hasn't revealed why he's working with Siren, considering Siren is apparently what made him hate all ocean dwellers. They've been able to go in and out, grabbing, you know, Aqualad and Aqualad's parents and stuff to torture them. Siren left Bermuda Triangle, yet to reveal how that happened. In this issue, they imply that they all escaped because of the White Lantern, which I guess could explain why they came in and out the whole time, but why did Siren think they escaped? Why was she so insistent on finding Aqualad to open the portal when it clearly was being opened anyway? And then the biggest problem I have with the issue is that Siren is has been loose with a small fighting force for, like, weeks, and then all of a sudden they attack this beach for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it seems like In hindsight of thinking about War of the Superman, you know, the event, which ended really poorly but started out really well, I guess half a year ago, one of the coolest things about that is in the third issue, as soon as the war started, the Superman went, Ursa went to every single country she could find and killed the leaders of the country. Like, they actually acted tactically, what people who can move at light speed with ultimate strength would do. They would just start attacking. Where Colt makes a good point that, I mean, really, they just show up at the beach, start whacking people. And yeah, they hate earth dwellers for no discernible reason. They hate land dwellers and stuff. And yeah, you know, they've been angry for centuries and they want to attack and stuff like that. But you think you could have done something better than just, you know, straight up attacking the beach. And it also doesn't really make any sense why Aquaman knows they'd be attacking that beach. He's like, we got to get there right away, even though he's under the impression that it's just Siren running around the country after him. And as a matter of fact, why would you bring Aqualad, who you at this point believe is the only person that could free these people, to the one point that they are to be freed? You know, I mean, none of the character actions in this story are really making a lot of sense. Though I do want to, like I said, best issue so far just because of the way the rising action happened. Aquaman's hand getting cut off was good, though I think at this point we're all kind of jaded enough by Brightest Day that even if this does stick, we don't believe it sticks, so it doesn't really hold any kind of weight. So,
well, that those level of plot holes made my head explode.
Stuck for a while last time, so whatever.
Yeah, I would like it if it did. I think it's kind of like people do expect Aquaman to have one hand, so you could get away with Geoff Johns being like, yeah, we really do have to bring him back to the way people understand.
What I'd like to see is them to reintroduce the Lady of the Water that was in the
run, the one that gave him back the hand.
Oh, the one that gave him back
the water hand. Yeah, yeah, we got the water hand. Because she seemed like
King Arthur.
It'd be fairly easy to rope her into the Brightest Day thing, like in the same way there's Lady of the Forest with Green Arrow. They seem like the similar size of the...
Well, we never know that might happen in, like, either at the end of Brightest Day or in the ongoing.
Yeah, and I know. Like I said, my biggest problem with the issue again is that it really does ignore everything that's been happening so far with the Aqua stories, and the story does implode. I mean, they're literally going in one direction. Aquaman just decides to go in the other direction because he thinks something's going to happen, and then it happens, and he's shocked when it happens. I mean, just it doesn't really logically hold up when you read the issues and try to. I feel like I nitpicked this series so much, and I did like the fact that, like I said, this issue was very clear cut and. You know, there was dudes wrecking shit and Aquaman had to stop him and he was in over his head. And I like Aqua War, really excited about it. I mean, you know, I don't know how much warring they can really do considering there's only like, you know, whatever and whatever. And honestly, if you're a siren, why are you going to attack a beach? I mean, you're going to get fucking wrecked by Superman. Are you out of your fucking mind? But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's like 70 of these dudes and fucking Jackson Hyde. Jackson Hyde, is that his name? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jackson Hyde is kicking their ass. Yeah. What chance do they have? You know what I mean? I mean, really, I mean, you know, whatever. Whatever. Anyway, I know Wes loved the issue, right, Wes?
I don't know whether they yell at you or try to just ignore you.
Well, Wes, try to retort to what, you know, what he's arguing.
Try to say anything against what I just said.
I don't want to waste another 20 minutes of our audience time, so I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible. Excluding the 10 pages of exposition we got from Dead Man in the Ring, having the worst conversation ever. The Aquaman stuff was amazing. I thought it just continued the best part of Brightest Day. Yeah, there were a few glitches here in Ivan's art, but I thought it was told well. The reason for Aquaman's surprise isn't because Siren is fucking out. It's because she's slaughtering a bunch of people, and it's not like he hasn't seen that before, but it's still pretty traumatic to get out the water and see throats being slit. And
he specifically says, no, we're too late, because he didn't think she didn't think the army would be free, and then
he didn't think that she'd be fucking up people. Like, of course he knew it shit was going down, that's why he was speeding away. He wasn't worried about the dead sea animals following him, or the live ones, rather. He was going to handle his business. And I thought the issue did a great job. It actually showed a teenager being thrown into battle and acting like a fucking teenager. Because I know if I was there, I wouldn't be, you know, acting like I was fucking Superman. I'd be probably pissing in the ocean if I'm seeing a army of people rise from the waters and slaughtering a bunch of people on the beach. And as for the beach, what's the big deal about destroying people on the beach?
It's not a tactical place to strike.
No, it's just illogical, and they've been planning for centuries for this. So.
I feel like we should reserve judgment on that for, I don't know, the next issue or so, to see where they go after this.
Yeah, maybe where they go off the beach, yeah.
All right, so, I mean, so if there's something after that, then...
There's like a secret base right behind the beach. You're like, this is what we're going for the whole time.
Like, they just got out of the fucking water. It's not like they've been sitting on that fucking beachfront property.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, we'll hit them.
That's fine. The entrance is right there, so I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Exactly. I mean, but Aquaman clearly doesn't know that they're coming out, because he says specifically we have to get there, because if we get there, they're not going to be able to open the Bermuda Triangle, and then he gets jumped. And he's like, we can handle a few if we run into them. And then the next page is like, oh my god, there are thousands out, somebody opened it up. So he did not expect this to happen. It doesn't make any sense. Why would he bring Jackson to the fucking Bermuda Triangle when he knows the one thing that's going to happen when Jackson gets to Bermuda Triangle, they're going to open up?
That's a last resort. Right.
But right. Why? Why not just take him far away from it? You know, why not bring him to the flash
pages? Because the war is going to happen regardless. So
it's not going to happen. It doesn't have to happen at all. It's been not happening for centuries.
It is.
It's been not happening for centuries, man. Explain why he took him to the Bermuda Triangle.
How can it not be happening for centuries, and he's been fighting Black Manta and
He was fighting Black Grass.
Oh, he hasn't fought anybody else from Mara's dimension since he met Mara. I mean, the idea being that these guys have been stuck for centuries.
Aqua War can't happen. It doesn't.
But your argument is that it's going to happen anyway. So why wouldn't he bring Jackson there? It's like because
like self-fulfilling prophecy.
But every issue has been about let's keep him away from Siren, and now he's like let's bring him to Siren. Because he's got his powers now.
The deal was, let's keep him away from Siren until we can get our shit together.
And that's what he was going to go get his shit together. He was going like, to go to get his shit
together. Did you not remember the issue where they fought?
No, I'm not saying that he doesn't have his powers and it's like, alright, now he can fight, but he specifically says we have to get you over there so we can get you away from her. We have to make sure she can't open this thing. Why would he bring just him over there? Why wouldn't he regroup with the Justice League? Why wouldn't he call Mara and stuff? I mean, it's not, you're not addressing any of the story holes here, you're just saying like, but it's like, exactly, like, the whole point of the series was he was going away from the Bermuda Triangle, now he's rushing towards it, even though he doesn't know what's gonna happen there.
Aquaman!
That's not, nothing to do with what I'm talking about.
That's not an answer, that's just shouting his name.
You're asking me, why wouldn't he go and stop, why wouldn't Siren he just from rising out of the Bermuda?
Aquaman!
Why wouldn't he get Siren in some other way away from the Bermuda Triangle? Why wouldn't he keep Jackson away from the Bermuda Triangle? Why not
lead? What is he gonna do, fight her in
lead? Yeah, like, the whole thing is, they're after Jackson, right? Siren's not gonna stop till she gets Jackson, right? Why not he just go to the Watchtower with Jackson, tell Siren where he is, you know, or use...
Go to the Watchtower? In space?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
Or you can get up there.
What is that gonna do? You're gonna have the whole fucking world being slaughtered while you're up in the Watchtower.
He had no idea until this issue.
Yeah.
So he goes
Superman, and then Superman killed all the fucking army.
And explain to me how they've been escaping why do they need Jackson to open the portal when they've just been clearly going in and out for decades? I mean, obviously, hopefully that'll be something they get into later, but it seems like a glaring problem that some of the characters should have been like, how the fuck did she get out at all? You know?
I mean, the only thing I think of is that the portal kind of blinks open and closed real quick.
You can't bitch about Superman not being called in to this story. That's like saying, why doesn't Batman call Superman when the Joker's on the loose?
This isn't a Joker. This is an army of thousands of sea demons from another dimension.
Okay, did you not read Batman and Robin Must Die? Was the city of Gotham not filled with 100,000 of zombies? Did you not read Batgirl, where the entire downtown city of Gotham was filled with zombies? Like, this shit happens on a regular basis.
A bunch of other superheroes showed up who got possessed and stuff. So, I mean, you're living in a shared universe where Aquaman is saying, no one can get this kid.
You would fucking not make this fucking complaint in any other fucking book.
I have before. We've talked about
this. That's bullshit.
Okay, one second. Calm down.
We've talked about this before. Dude, and we're talking about Green Lantern storyline from last year where all the superheroes showed up to specifically do what we're talking about. We're talking about a storyline where Flash said, a big fight's gonna happen, I have to run to every single superhero in the world, tell them what's up, you know what I mean?
Here's a point of speculation. A couple pages into things, we see the dark avatar rise up and there's like a big white star shining on the planet that gets all emblackened.
Right.
You think that's an evil star?
Actually, I think that's supposed to be the only part that's still good.
You thought that probably the force.
Yeah, that star's the forest, and that's the only good part left, and then if that's destroyed, then everything goes kablammy.
I really hope they don't tie back into the Green Arrow stuff.
Well, they've been trying to for a while now. Bright as they even made a mention of the fact that the forest will probably be destroyed by the Avatar of Evil or something like that, or death, or whatever. But yeah. The shared universe complaint has been, you know, has been noted on everybody's cases and multiple times. I mean, to say to Brandon bringing up the events of Batman and Robin or Batgirl and why Superman didn't show up, well, they showed you clearly what he was doing at that time. He was fighting Superman 2, you know, Superman of Earth 2 at that point in time, so they couldn't have made it. In this storyline, however, Superman's walking around somewhere.
It's even besides that. It's not even about that Superman didn't show up. It's not, obviously Superman's not there, so he could have showed up if he had to. The point, in fact, is that it's completely illogical for Aquaman to do what he did, and he's only doing that to get them there, which they didn't even need to do, really. The way the story works, you know, they could have just had other things happen. I mean, you know, how big is the Bermuda Triangle? You know what I mean? They just could have done something else.
So if, I'm just trying to lay this out and understand your point of view. Siren is on her way out. You're assuming that Aquaman feels that by the time he gets there, she still won't be out.
Well, there's no reason to assume. Well, no, he knows she's out. Like, she's loose. Her and, like, a death squad is loose. He just assumes that a huge army is going to attack. Yeah. He thinks it's going to happen near that coast because that's where the Bermuda Triangle is. So that's right. Why he's going there. Yeah.
And your complaint is, why the fuck would you bring Jackson? Right?
Well, that's one of my major complaints. Yeah.
Okay. So if he already feels there's going to be an army there, what's the problem of bringing somebody who's already going to unlock? If the door's already open, what's the problem in bringing the key?
That's the whole point, because he thinks the door is just momentarily open. The whole point of the Aqualad.
He never said it's going to be momentarily open. He's just feeling we should nip this in the bud before shit gets worse.
That's not what he's saying. He's specifically saying we have to get there and figure out what's going on, because if they get you, they're going to open the portal. And he says they're not. The whole premise of the Aqualad story is that Siren is trying to get Aqualad to open the portal. That's the one thing that's happening. And Aquaman says, well, now that you have your weapons, let's go to the portal and hope they don't open it. It's like, why? Like, why did anybody say to him, like, no, Aquaman, please, take him to Arizona where there's no goddamn water, where these guys can't get to him, you know? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to rush to the one point where you're not supposed to go. You know, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's like throwing yourself on the grenade because the grenade's going to explode.
He's already in.
Well, technically, the main reason he'll keep Jackson next to him is because he can't trust anybody else with him. It's his responsibility. That would be the logical thing for Aquaman to do. It's like he wants to keep him safe, so the best way to keep him safe is by having him next to him. The problem is in the story is that there's no clear definition as to what Jackson's role is, except for the fact that they've already mentioned that he is the key to open the portal. They never try to mention that he may be the key to close the portal or make any allusions to that. We're just supposed to guess that way, because more than likely that's what's going to happen.
They really could have just done something else. I mean, they didn't have to. Aqualad could have just been, he could have just been nearby, or it could have been like, we have to go there for this reason or something. I mean, really, like, I mean, come on. It's like, let's run away from the explosion. Okay, now let's run at the explosion. It doesn't make any sense. I'm just saying.
All right. So moving away from the topic at hand, unless someone else has a different point of view to bring up,
Is it weird that Aquaman isn't bothered by the loss of Tempest?
I'm really depressed about it, yeah.
I mean, he brought it up once, didn't he?
He said he's the first issue,
right? That was a zero issue. It might have been a zero issue.
So technically, it's only been like 3 days since, like, he said, oh man, Tempest is dead.
And then he had sex. And it was over.
Mara's like, oh yeah, but these guys,
you know, have to mourn.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Mara says, are you thinking about Garth, your son, for a 3 year? He's like, I guess so, I'm not really. She's like, yeah, it's fine, he's with his girlfriend who also died. He's like, I guess. That's cool.
You're right.
Forget it.
Let's do it.
All right, Bing. I know you read this issue. You have anything to say?
I did read this issue. I don't have really much to say, to be quite honest, which is why I've been quiet and listening to Mommy and Daddy fight so much. No, I don't know. The opening with the pages and pages of exposition just kind of makes me think. Anytime I hear the, you don't understand, there's a plan, all I can think of is Battlestar Galactica and how the Cylons had a plan, and it was a shitty plan. So I'm kind of curious to see how this pans out, and I'm trying to get my hands on the first few issues. My local comic shop doesn't have the first couple issues of Brightest Day, so I'm going to have to go to another comic shop and get them so that I can read all of this in order, so I can maybe try to understand what the hell is going on.
First book is out. Yeah, just so you know, the first book is
seven
out.
Seven issues
out? Oh, is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, anyway, I was looking in the back issue bin to try and get the individual issues, so.
Yeah.
I will see what I can find. But yeah, I don't know, aside from the Trident stuff, which I didn't even notice, I really kind of dug the art. I really kind of like the coloring. But that's just me.
You know, one thing I'm bothered about is, why is Deadman just going to the route of pretty much just being a pariah at this point? He's just appearing places and, oh hey, I should do something, poof, I'm gone.
Yeah,
that's very true.
Yeah, well, before he, no one noticed him. I think now that he's on the beach and he can actually do something. If we see in the next issue that he can make like some giant machine gun construct with the ring, then I'll be like, all right, then now Deadman's in the action, and all this bullshit praise he's been getting all over the internet will finally be justified, because I don't know what everybody's been liking now. Only thing he's done is eat a cheeseburger and have sex.
That ramp he made with his grandfather, is that going to always be there now, ramp?
I mean, it was gone. It was gone when Dove got there.
Oh, fuck. They're already... Oh, never mind.
They already forgot about this point.
Poor grandpa's still in that side.
Well, there's a lot of things about that. Yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean,
I just... I just want to picture some guy walks up, sees the ramp, is like, I'm taking this home. Just drives off with it while they're talking.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's go on to Green Lantern Emerald Warriors, number 7. The continuation of the further adventures of Sodaniat and Guy Gardner.
There's a few pages in. There's a scene where like Guy is so Guy is shooting the ring at. Does this villain have a name?
Zardor or something like that.
Zardoz.
Right after he says, "I'll have complete control over him." There's a scene where Guy's trying to punch him, and his face is like. I have no clue what face he's making. It's like, I don't know. Anyways, besides that, the dialogue, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, but the dialogue is just awkward.
Pretty awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so piss me off and kiss me, you red bitch. Like, what?
Yeah.
And like, this is my favorite. There goes the old USS Enterprise off to Brooklyn.
I like.
What does that mean? If you can explain it, I want to know. I don't understand
There's probably a reference from something or something. I have no idea.
I just want to know why it doesn't look like the Enterprise.
I have a feeling it's supposed to be a Star Trek reference, but clearly he's not making.
I've seen everything with U.S. Enterprise, and they never go to Brooklyn.
Yeah, right.
Where did they go in the movie with the whales?
They were in San Francisco. That's right. Yeah, that's where that's where Starfleet Academy's headquarters is.
Exactly like Brooklyn and San Francisco.
They're similar.
Yeah.
And the face that Zardar is making is smugness, and it's actually really well drawn, I thought. But yeah.
Was it smugness?
I actually, the art in this issue is pretty strong, except for the one or two completely indecipherable panels.
He's clearly not as smug as Ryan Reynolds.
No. Yeah. But who is like real?
I guess they probably redrew it because of this new character, Ali Sun, which I think we can all go on record as saying is a brand new character, because I saw a lot of speculation like, oh, we don't remember. Somebody tell me who she is, hardcore Green Lantern fans? And like, yeah, she just doesn't exist in continuity yet, so don't worry about it. But
oh, good.
Exactly. Where you get stabbed in the shoulder, and it's very unclear what's happening, but obviously they just redrew it to get her picture in there, and there's a couple of panels where the guy escapes from the snake, it's like, I don't know what's happening there. I guess the eyes are exploding out or something.
that was epic.
Yeah, I mean,
he got swallowed twice? Is that what it is?
And then, no, yeah. he got swallowed once, and then he slammed the snake down the other snake's throat.
Yeah. I mean, to rip on the series, that
crazy panel that Eric's trying to make mention of with the eyes popping out.
Scrunch.
Yeah, he apparently rips his arms through the snake's eye sockets.
And then rips it in half.
It tears open his mouth.
I see it now. Oh.
Yeah, no one can understand what happened there, but yeah, that is actually what happened there.
The fall of 1958. The USS Enterprise is towed under the Brooklyn Bridge from the Brooklyn Navy Yard to her last port of call, Kearney, New Jersey, to the shipbreakers and into history.
Oh, it's not a Star Trek reference.
It's historical history. Wow.
That's even easier, because Guy Gardner makes Star Trek
references. Yeah, Guy Gardner. Football player. Yeah. Jock, right?
All right, yeah, we were.
Very weird. Anyway, but I want to say really, I remember when when the preview for the issue came out, I read the first couple pages, and I actually got really excited about the issue, because the first couple pages are really dramatic, and I like the dialogue the fact that dialogue is happening while Zardor is putting Guy and the snake, and the snake's eating him, and Guy using the ring on Zardor point blank and it not working, and him just kind of shoving him in the snake, and the way it plays out is pretty cool, and I think that maybe Peter Tomasi's kind of showing off his what he's good at here, you know, which is completely disgusting nonsense and a lot of business happening at the same time, and it's pretty cool. I mean, this is actually cathartic for the storyline. I mean, too much battling actually happens in this issue. Too many people kick the shit out of Zardor, and too many characters get completely brain wiped and escape at the end and stuff, just because I think this kind of points out that this is issue, like, I think this is issue 35, I think, of the series or whatever, and, like, you know, we're finally getting some kind of conclusion to the storyline, and it's not really, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, there's some good bits, but
it's about as much conclusion as you can get in a story arc these days under any writer.
Yeah, I mean, when the story started, I was like, oh, you know, I hope they kill Zardor by the end of it, because that'd just be a nice way to end the story, but, you know, Tomasi is going out of his way to create a brand new character that's not created a Green Lantern mythos, that's connected to a bunch of other characters in a way that's
combative. You know, he's not just one of Krona's lackeys. He's specifically antagonistic to Krona, you know, except for the fact that Guy Gardner and Kilog both kick his ass, which severely diminishes him as a badass. You know, he's significantly powerful enough and threatening enough that, you know, he could go places. I think the reader at Kuhan said that almost every single dialogue out of Guy Gardner's mouth is worse than the last one before it. and especially the continued stream of dialogue that says,
I'm going to freaking kill you.
Please, can't focus much longer. Maybe only one way out of this is to feed my rage. Maybe only way out of this is to feed my rage. So piss me off and kiss me, you red bitch. Yeah, I think you really can't get much worse. What's happening in the panel?
No. I can honestly say the line after he finished beating the crap out of Zardar and then he's talking to Aresia and something about Allison, that's the line that makes no sense to me. It just, I don't know why he's saying it. He's just sitting there saying, trapped, she's trapped after all these years. Guy, you're not making any sense. Who's trapped? Her soul. Alisa's soul. Zardar's got her. It's my fault she's inside the bastard's sword. Huh?
Yeah. I mean,
I thought it was supposed to be confusing, I think.
But I've said this from back in the day when I was having a fucking lust affair with Green Lantern Corps, and I thought this guy could do no wrong. Every line of dialogue out of guy's mouth is terrible. Like, he overrides everything he says. And the fact that I don't know why he had to get a kill shot bead on these characters. Just blast him with a goddamn ring, you idiot. Like, what, is this a new thing they have to do? Like, you know.
Access kill shot protocol.
Yeah. This is very cool art in this issue. I think Fernando Paterin obviously is, really not getting paid enough, you know, for whatever it is he's doing. He's putting this stuff, this has mostly been a monthly book, and, I mean, come on, 7 issues this guy drawn, and it's sick. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous how Bleez is completely disrespected as a character and just kind of flown off at the end, and no one seems to care or notice or acknowledge it. And the issue ends very abruptly. So it's almost like, I think what it is, maybe Tomasi had like 9 or 10,000 issues of this storyline planned, and they said, you gotta wrap it up for Green Lantern Corps, the War of the Green Lanterns, which I do want to say this did not. This did not prelude into that at all, because I have yet to understand what the conflict is going to be, and it starts next month, so I'll just leave it at that.
Let's hope Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps do better picking up that slack.
I do want to say I really like the issue a lot, though, regardless of all the problems I had with it. Everything Tomasi does good, he did good. He did well in this issue, and everything Paterin does, he did. I mean, come on, look at these panels of Guy and the fucking snakes. I mean, inside the snake, those are amazing panels. I mean, nobody can say those aren't.
They're great.
Yeah, they look pretty cool.
I can honestly say I have no problem with Guy accessing the kill shot protocol. I mean, the book is becoming more and more science fiction, you know. It's more about these things being a science-based, you know, mechanism of, you know, of a higher caliber than magic. So, you know, with a K.
Magic.
So.
I think the kill shot thing, I think it rings true to the whole cop thing that they tried to throw off in the first issue. With him on the motorbike and stuff, the kill shot is like, oh, I need permission to blast these fuckers away. But
then he needs permission from himself.
I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I thought it was just like another way for him to, you know, have better aim.
That's
that it was something special about.
And he asked the ring to
homing something. I don't know.
Yeah. And he specifically says, "Ring, kill them both." Like, so he's not like trying to throw a beam at them. He's saying, "Ring, I want you to specifically kill them both." So it's like he's asking it to do
like
something.
Maybe situations where it's like you're in a bit of a bind, or you're being distracted by multiple opponents, or something like, or time is not on your side, and you can't concentrate a bunch of shit at once. So it's like, "Ring, just do this for me." And
If you think about the limits of what the ring can do, there really aren't any. So, especially if you read older comics, you get the sense that you really could just say, okay, ring, could you make a clone of me to do my homework for me? And it'll do it. Like, there's no reason it can't do it. It literally can do anything. So, he really can just, it only draws an attention as soon as Guy Gardner gets into a fight. He should just say, ring, knock everyone in the room unconscious. Just do it, and then step back, and the ring will do it. I mean, there's no reason for, you know, anything more elaborate than that to ever happen. But, you know, that would be completely boring as a comic. So, yeah.
I think it just, but it still shows a fault to the Green Lantern concept. Is, you know, he still wants to kill them. So whether he gets hit in the back or not shouldn't stop that giant beam of light from missing its target.
Yeah, but again, it's focused on his will. So, you know, if he's not concentrating enough to actually make the shot, he won't make the shot.
Like, concentration and will, do they really go hand in hand? Like, doing a hamburger.
Will and concentration are basically the exact same thing. You have to concentrate to have, you know, half a tremendous amount of will.
True. No, that's I think that is illogical. I think maybe you just got to think of Aresia hitting him as like a visual aid, you know, to what was already a bizarre situation. Yeah.
I mean, real quick, just to jump on everybody's back here. Fernando, like I said during the first couple of issues, that Passman reminds me of Ryan Sook, just without the, you know, badness. Like, the art is great here, and, you know, aside from the final panel where everyone's staring me down, it really is a great looking book, and there's a, I think.
Final panel?
Yeah, that final panel is a Reese.
Really, that bothers you?
Yeah, I don't like her look.
They're judging you.
She is really good.
She is not having any more of your shit.
Better like this book.
There's a panel or page where Bleez is leading the people out into a giant red bubble of something, and someone says it smells like burned blood or something like that.
Yeah, why do they know what that smells like?
Why does that sound familiar to you?
Smells like burning blood. Shut up and climb into these. It's like giant red balls.
You're exactly what it smells like,
guy.
I do. There's a couple times in the issue where Sodomiette's like, kill me, and Guy Gardner tries to kill him, and the ring's gonna kill him and stuff, and he's like, Kilowog, you gotta kill me, and I'm like, how the fuck would Kilowog ever kill, like, how's he gonna do it? Like, I mean, suffocate him? I mean, he's Superman, you know, a Green Lantern ring can't kill Superman. I mean, back in the day, it could create kryptonite out of thin air and stuff, but, I don't know, it broke the drama for me, cause I was kinda like, no, I'm sorry, you can't. The fucking guy's fucking Ion, you have no chance of killing the guy, you know, took me out of the loop.
Well, could he just make like a bunch of oxygen fill their like veins?
Well, he's stick figure man now, so it
doesn't
matter. Well, like Eric though, I was a little bothered by the lack of anyone caring about Bleez at the end. She just kind of gets roped off, and
I think you kind of see that coming. I mean, I have to admit this is my favorite issue of this series thus far. I take public transportation, so I was reading this on the bus ride home from my comic shop on Wednesday. And I was just cackling like a madwoman. There's like a saying that if you can't find the crazy person on the bus, it's because it's you. It was totally me that day. Because I'm reading this, and I'm looking at you. You go to this, even the second page in the first panel, you just look in the upper right-hand corner, and there's Bleez's hand just sticking out of a snake. And I was like, where did Bleez go? And I had to go back, and I was like, oh, my God, she was just eaten by a snake. That's awesome. So you kind of know that, you know, Bleez is getting a raw deal completely in this issue just by her first entrance in the book. Like, the first time you see her is just her hand, like, raking across the snake's, you know, snout. It's just, it's awesome. This whole, I love Gardner being a thug. I love that he has terrible dialogue. I love that he hits things. Can I talk about the awesomeness that is the ice cream scoop construct?
Yeah.
Because that to me is the best, the highest.
A lot of eyes are being gouged out in this issue.
Yeah, this is definitely all eyes out issue, but that was just it. I was like, all right, I'm done. This book has given me everything I've needed. It's got a thug protagonist. It's got like completely gratuitous violence for the sake of no reason whatsoever. I love it.
There's more spit from his mouth than blood out of his eye.
This isn't the first time that Tomasi's done an entire eye gouging arc, has it?
Yeah, that was a bad arc.
I was even impressed, and you can tell I work at a zoo part-time, I was even impressed that on the cover they had both a coral snake and a Sinaloan milk snake. So there you go.
Thank you, Rodolfo Megalari.
We do have to talk about really quick, just guys dialogue again. I think that's got to really sell itself for this issue. I mean, do we want to do the thing where I just read his dialogue again? I mean, he says,
go ahead.
At one point he says, damn it all. Like, who, first off, how do you say damn it all? Whatever, I'm not going to get into it. And then, you think gunning for a fellow lander is on my fun list? Like, what, the fun list isn't even a thing, guy.
Carlton Heston.
That's true. I like how I like how the idea that Guy speaks in this kind of dialect, I guess, that's never existed in any human, like, I said before the cast, and I think it needs to be earlier, Peter Tomasi, I think, has never heard human beings speak in real life, ever. So, I mean, I think he's like, this is how tough guys talk, right? And it's like literally every half of every sentence is from a completely different thought. It doesn't make any sense, you know? I love it, it's fine. You're totally into it at this point, right?
Yes. I think the art helps a lot, because like you said, You saw the first couple of pages and you were hooked and stuff. I was like, I thought the first couple of pages was a whole bunch of terrible ass dialogue from Zardoff or whatever.
Yeah.
But it helps because, you know, he was torturing somebody during the you know,
he's
the talk.
He's monologuing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, it helps because the art is great.
I mean, I think about the vision, if you actually put the images together and try to actually, like, look at the motion that's happening, and he's slowly tucking Guy Gardner into a snake. Like,
yeah. No, see, I read that, and I'm looking, I'm like, did the snake just jump up and bite his legs? I'm like, it's weird, but
the one point, yeah, he's
lowering him, so it works better that way.
And he just starts putting him in a snake, yeah.
Well, the one thing I actually don't like in the issue is the fact that, basically, Saddam Yat totally kills an entire group of people that were wearing clothes. I don't know why they were wearing clothes, because, you know, the last group of people that we saw were completely naked. And it just has Bleez hanging from her bony wings.
And bony ass wings.
Bony ass wings. That's it, you know, set right, by the famed Guy Gardner. But it's just a weird thing to see. It's like, you know, what happened? Like, one second, the snake's crawling out his nose. Next second, oh, yeah, he murdered everybody.
It's Tomasi to a T, though. Does anybody remember that? I mean, Karen probably doesn't, but remember that issue where Saddam Yat was talking to the Steve Buscemi Sinestro Corps member, and then Saddam Yat's mother crashed into the building and kills the guy, and then Saddam Yat does not even care. He's like, Mom, what are you doing here? Like, not even, like, no reaction. It's like, oh, yeah, Mom, what are you doing here? Just murdering dudes, no big deal. Yeah, whatever. It's awesome, whatever. That's Peter. Yeah,
that's actually something weird that was never even addressed now that I remember that. It's a good thing you remember. They never brought anything up about her mom, about his mom.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm still not quite sure what's going on with Daxum. Is Daxum, they don't have powers now, right? It's the thing.
Right.
They all
fell from, like, from grace and all that crap.
Yeah, apparently their buildings were destroyed when they all fell from the sky.
They were holding them up.
So that's it, right?
Hey, wait, I have a weird question.
Go for it.
Something just occurred to me. If Bleez is out and mind controlled and there are all of these people escaping in one of her constructs,
it pops open and they all die.
Oh, yeah, they're dead. Yeah, they're dead. Yeah.
Oh,
just checking.
Yeah.
I thought that was a guy construct.
Rescue mission.
Well, no, because there's, no, I mean, one. Unless yeah.
She made at least one big red bubble one.
Yeah. You know, the one that smells like burning blood.
Yeah.
She made two giant red balls.
Yeah. Well, maybe they never left. Maybe they were still there.
They were still there.
Even if they're still on the planet, I just imagine the bubble collapses on them and melts them.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
Oh, hopefully.
But then again, guys burned like a million times by that red blood, and it never affected him too much.
Yeah.
And well, I swallowed some, so.
Well, I guess that's it for the review.
I feel like they're kind of downplaying the acidity of the red blood, like, little by little. Like, in the beginning, it was like, oh my god, it's like the first Alien movie, or it's like eating through like 20 decks, and by the second movie, it's like a mild irritant. I'm like,
god damn it.
You gotta assume that, you know, I mean, come on, I don't care, whatever, that he's got the ring infection, that somebody vomiting acid blood in your mouth, you know, is not gonna.
What's that supposed to do? Yeah.
I think I saw Reptile in Mortal Kombat do that. It didn't end well.
It's like
aside from ruining one's enamel.
You're gonna have bad breath, bro. Like every next time he tries to kiss Kyle, it's like stop.
What is this going to do for the new Red Lantern book? Isn't she supposed to be one of the main characters?
Yeah, she's supposed
kind of
to
a
be
pain if she's a hypno slave to the
Cyclops. Sardaur is probably going to show up in the war and
die.
This is kind of a device to get her out of this and into that.
I guess so.
Yeah,
probably. Because we're still not quite sure what else. I mean, I feel like there's another big hook. Hopefully,
there's got to be, because this was supposed to hook all the stories together, right?
Well, I feel like there's going to be another big hook in the Red Lantern when that starts. It's going to be kind of like a whole, you know, Reign of Doomsday thing where there's just a big piece of information we're not being told deliberately, like Guy Gardner's in it or something. I mean, I hope so. I don't think it's necessarily true, but I hope so.
All right, so basically the book has some prequel-esque for War of the Green Lanterns. If we see Zardon or Zardar or whatever you call it.
Zardoz.
Zardon.
It's Zarbon. Zordon.
Zarbon in the... Yeah, and you can see him in the next issue of the War of the Green Lanterns. But, I guess that's it for reviews. You know, we pretty much, you know, we enjoyed them somewhat to a point. Wes and Eric got into a big argument about Brightest, Friday's Day number 19.
It's been actually one of the better weeks in quite a while that we've had to read comics.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of Reign of Doomsday, the next one isn't until March 9th.
Yeah. What's the deal? Like, what kind of event is that?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't really matter for a Green Lantern podcast. So, but one thing that does matter is that,
well, next week we're going to have the winner of our first themed episode vote-off. We're going to be covering Grant Morrison's JLA, yay! And Kyle Rayner's participation therein. So we can't promise that everybody involved in the cast is going to be next week, but I promise you that you personal viewer, individual, that I'm actually, you know, not going to use your proper name as to not embarrass you, your favorite cast members will be on. Your favorite cast members will be on, and all your least favorite cast members will not be on. So you should definitely tune in next week for our special theme episode, Grant Morrison's JLA.
Except Colton is always here.
Right. Well, don't tell them that, because I think Colton's the... Anyway, so the episode will be called Grant Morrison's JLA, yay or nay. Then we're not going to do that, but yeah, there you go.
You know how to make a guy hate himself.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good night.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at KirbyCracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freewebs.com/RoyClarkMethod.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long.
That was such a great intro, too.
You can ask me.
I always assume you start recording like early on, just to get all our banter out the way.
I usually do, but I didn't this time.
Frank, you're the master controller. You can't assume anything. You know what happens when you assume? You are fuck you, an asshole. I think that's the pun, right?
You make a presumption based on an incomplete series of facts.
That's an old one. Okay.
Yeah, that's what it used to mean.
Yeah.
Now it means fuck you, asshole.
I mean, fucking asshole. Pick up your shirt. That's what it means.
Don't look back.
Ready to roll now?
Recording? Do it in the Boudica.
Do it in the Boudica.
Dance to Boudica in the pants. Dance to Boudica.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
All right, good.
Dance too much Boudica in the pants.
Your body
heavy, like the title of this episode.
Right, I'm gonna wait till everybody gets their, you know, their giggles out the way.
Okay, Boudica in the butt. Let's go.
All right, good. Welcome everybody.
Body so Boudica.
Damn.
Do it in the Boudica.
Do it in the Boudica. Do it in the Boudica.
All right, let's go.
I'm doing a Google search for "do it in the Boudica," and I hope this does not break my computer.
Rule 34, friend.
What if it brings up like one or two hits word for word?
Oh, I spelled "do it in the boot." I spelled "Boudica" wrong. How do
good?
You guys pronounce "Boudica"?
Boudicca.
It has K's in it.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
It has two K's.
Well, the historical figure is from what I understand.
It also didn't say. It also didn't say spell. It said pronounce.
Oh, shut up.
All right, we're good to go.
This is the first thing that showed up when I searched for it. So you guys know. And I got to tell you, in terms of doing the Boudicca, I would.
Let's see.
Oh, Frankie, can you start? I'm going to click on the link now.
Frankie, could you start if you don't mind?
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. No, I can't do it now. Can't even grasp a thought right now.
Jump out a window.
Adrian Brody.
Why am I thinking about Adrian Brody?
Don't worry all about right. it.
Who's typing? Come on, is that you?
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Just
it's loud. Stop. Static.
Yeah.
We finally get to the third issue in 7 issues.
I mean,
that joke's old.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I'm past that already.
Oh, you guys, it was fine. Don't worry about it.
So
stop hating on me.
Wait, Kuan, you want to make mention of
that? Start paying attention. Maybe we'll start hating on you.
I want to hear Kuan's
Well, there's. Kuan.
And to let you all informed, it is.
Hold on. Sorry, I mean to interrupt you. Let's just explain a little clearer, just in case people didn't listen last week. Say like, oh, last week we had a vote of what our game is going to be, and then it's going to be next week, you know, or like next week we have a treat.
Next week is when we're recording. Next week is not when it's going to be put out.
Well, presumably we'll record it by Thursday and we'll be out by Saturday, Sunday, like everything else, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, we can do that one. All right. So,
ow.
So did you hit yourself?
Leg cramp.
Somebody threw up in his mouth. Some mild air.
Acidic blood in people's mouths. But
yeah, I'm gonna tell my dog that. Kiss me.
In the following week, you'd be sure to see that. I don't even know. I'm trying to finish this. I have no idea what's going on. The fruits of our labor is gonna be gives whatever. I don't even know anymore. No idea.
Just throw to Eric.
No, you don't have to do that. You can. Well, it's up to you. But I don't want to pressure you.
Eric, go over it.
Just speak English, Frankie. What's
no, Eric, go over it.
No, I don't want you to be. No, I'm not doing it.
What are you talking about?
So last week,
I believe.
So, Eric,
do it.
Do it in. Well, I don't know if you guys. Do it in. If you were listening last week, you knew that we. Which I guess is the 2 iterations ago, I suppose. But basically, it's going to be all about Kyle Rayner and what happens to him. And you know what? That's all garbage. Everything I just said is garbage. Can we just not do that? Why did Frankie, like, break my English? Frankie, you broke my English.
Yeah, I tend to do that.
Next week, we're going to have the winner.
Most people say bye.
Nope.